high technology at the bleeding edge of the radical right. Majority Rights Radio.
Hello, this is GW. That's another radio show, this time with Alex Linder, who should be very well known to just about everybody who wants to click on that link and listen to this. But for anyone who doesn't know, he's a very fierce advocate of the single Jewish cause. Well, he is, and you just haven't been paying attention. A lot of the interviews with Alex have tended, I think, to concentrate rather too much on his tactics and on his language and on the general way that VNN approaches the issue. I'm not really interested in repeating all that. It's been done to death, probably, and Alex is probably pretty fed up with it as well. So I thought we'd move on and look at the issues, I hope, at a slightly deeper level. So I'm going to begin talking about the actual capacity of the kind of anti-Semitic discourse that Alex favours to deliver change in the life of white Americans. Alex, what do you actually think in the long term would flow from an awareness amongst the white American public of the Jewish role and of the Jewish way of doing things?
Well, hopefully they would be opposed. I think what you find in America, and it's probably the same in Britain and Europe, is there are a lot of things that people don't like. But what they don't know is, and where the education and the value of media really is, lies in connecting them with what's causing them. To me, that is a simple and self-evident thing. But a lot of people are against it, particularly people the Jews actually send out deliberately to obscure the causal connection between the stuff they don't like. Soft judges, you know, open borders, affirmative action, the things they vote against time after time that are squashed in the courts, and the Jewish cause of all that. So I've done from day one everything I could to educate them on that particular connection.
What would the results be, though, Alex? I mean, this is the thing. If one were to be able to educate enough people for the subject to be spoken about honestly.
Well, it's still an ongoing thing. I mean, one hand you could say nothing. I mean, there's nobody elected who will speak against the Jews. There have been a couple who've tried it in the U.S. We had Traficant, who was later thrown in jail for it. He defended Demjanjuk. He just got out of jail after several years. He said the U.S. is totally owned by Israel. America is controlled by Jews. It's
so
basically 100%.
Under the present level of control, even if white Americans were able to discuss the issue in an informed way, it still wouldn't break the hold, would it? You'd have to do something more.
Well, it remains to be seen. I think we haven't had any direct political effect in terms of anyone being elected, but a whole lot more people than 10 years ago, and we started now thinking the way that we do and usually use our terms. Or if they don't use our terms, they're consciously working against them on the basis of something else. Now, that's where it has to start. And there's a lot more that could be done, but you know, we're working on that. You have to kind of engage and withdraw out the culture at the same time. You have to fight it, describe what's going on. The stuff that I'm against is too much complaining about colored crime, et cetera, when there's without or deliberately forswearing any kind of connection to what is causing this. There was a time when we didn't have this stuff. And one point I want to make is Jews are the only issue about which people claim that you have to have some kind of series of steps to teach people what the problem is. And I've never bought that. They went for the ethnic change in America. That's why your neighbor is a Mexican. They went for the civil rights, i.e. the communist revolution. That's why you're discriminated against on the job. You have to make those connections for the American people. And if you do, the media is going to come down on you like a ton of bricks because the Jews control the government, the media, and the academic system.
So what is the actual linkage? If it's not democratic, what is the actual linkage between educating the public and seeing change at the level of the media and government?
Well, you're going to have to... I don't know how you're going to solve a problem unless you know what's going on. Once you know what's going on, you have to take certain personal steps to protect yourself, to protect your money, to protect your mind. And then at the same time, it works best if you pursue some kind of a political strategy. Certain people have run for office to no particularly great effect. It's just... there's such an overwhelming domination of the sources of authority in this society. In America, like everywhere else, most people believe that they're served.
Yeah.
So there's no easy answer to it.
Yeah. What concerns me, there's this tremendous deficit politically in America which, along with Ireland, perhaps, is the only country that doesn't have a proper political movement of nationalist nature. And, you know, without that, it doesn't seem possible to me, no matter what you achieve as an educator, which is, I guess, a fair way to describe you, to actually affect change. In the end, you may get to the point where people perceive the federal government, the government machine, and its paymasters as being some kind of overbearing, untouchable elite, which is what they are, which is essentially oppressing them. They may come to that understanding, but how the hell do they actually effect change? The only possible answer for that problem is a totally different educational program, which is the movement towards an ethnostate, a complete secession.
Well, sure, you can advocate all that stuff at the same time. There's no particular problem. The party route, I'm not saying someone couldn't do it. I don't really see how they could. You have to look at, you can still move away from a lot of problems here. You can take your kids out of school and homeschool them and try to get away from the system. That has really been growing. That's more where you have to look for change. Now, yeah. Movement toward an ethnostate, as long as you don't have physical power, you don't have money or whatever, they can smash you just as easily as anything else. I mean, we smash foreign countries, let alone the U.S. Yeah. Anybody, look at the unregenerate Mormons. They try to move from hinterland Arizona to hinterland Texas, and all it takes is one concocted bogus call and they're in there taking 400 of their kids. So anybody who tries to set up an ethnostate, sure, go ahead and do it, but the minute you obtain any power, another example, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh in Oregon, he had a bunch of people following whatever his philosophy was. The Fed smashed him as well. I mean, they have the power. They're going to smash anything that rises up. So what we have going for us is that their system is built on contradictions, and it basically is undermining itself. I mean, we're bankrupt. We go around the world lecturing. I mean, you wrote a good piece on majority rights, you know, describing our war in Iraq. We lecture everybody else. We kill everybody else. We say we don't care. But the idiots eat it up. What are you going to do? And unless you control the TV stations, there's not much you can do except avoid it and try to explain to people what's going on while we still have the First Amendment. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen, but there are other ways to go other than overt politics.
Right.
I mean, what I've recommended multiple times is an advocacy group. You need to have two or three professional quality people out there who represent white interests and go around from hotspot to hotspot like Sharpton or Jackson. Now, they won't get the same treatment as they do, but if they did that often enough, say once a month, they would eventually work their way into the Jew-controlled media. And it would have an effect, and I know there is money
out there. There are two out there. I mean, FIRE, I think, is one, isn't it, that seems to have been fairly active on the campus front.
Who's that?
FIRE, F-I-R-E, I think it is.
I'm not sure who that is.
Yeah, okay. I remember doing a story on it a while ago, and it was quite an interesting example of overreach by the establishment in one of the universities, but I can't remember which one it was now. And they had got a very strong program in place to re-educate freshmen, with the result that some of these kids were so shocked by it and had managed to get the interest of an organization, legal organization, that looks out for people's rights. And they took it on. I was quite impressed by that. Greg Lukianoff, I think, was the name of the guy who was involved.
Mm.
But I mean, it's there. I'll send you the link on that so you can have a look. But and there's Resisting Defamation, Bo Sears and Stanley Womack, Dom Miller. Mm-hmm. Overall, I mean, I can't see enough rising up. We're looking at where we are, looking at the amount of time that's left for white Americans, say 2040 maybe. You know, you have to say, well, where is it? It should be coming through now across a fairly broad scale.
People over here have voted. I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong with white people. There's no leadership, and if it tries to rise up, it gets smacked down. The people vote time after time. They voted to shut the borders. If you took a referendum, like I guess they do in Switzerland sometimes, if you took a referendum, do you want the borders closed or open? Do you want affirmative action, i.e. discrimination against what you call positive discrimination over there? If you took votes on those, they would go down, and they have gone down. But what happens is, the Jews control the law school. It gets into the court, and they simply ignore it. So effectively, you know, if you try to use the legal process, it just doesn't work in your favor. It's not built that way. So the other option that we haven't talked about is using violence, which the system itself certainly does. They you know, I just got done reading a book about George Lincoln Rockwell, and the feds did a fair number of dirty tricks to try to undermine him, and he had a totally legal organization. So you're dealing with people who, obviously, if you look at what the U.S. does around the world, they aren't the slightest bit concerned about law. It's just yammering in the press to, I guess, impress the few people who believe their word. But, yeah, it's a dirty, violent thing, and escaping its clutches is about the best we can do for now. But there still is room if you had people who would go out there and do white advocacy, but they have to do it under their real name. They have to do it overtly anti-Jew. They have to do it regularly, routinely. And then there would be support there. People understand. The reason they're putting money into stuff like Ron Paul is they know the Republicans are bankrupt. They know they're nothing but a bunch of liberals. As these people wake up, what they potentially might come to white nationalism, but what the Jews have done is build various front organizations to try to sidetrack them in other useless stuff, you know, that complains about black crime. The blacks don't have any power. They don't have any brains. They aren't capable of leading themselves. All the best historians we have documented how the Jews set up these so-called civil rights organizations to lead them and to use them against white society rather than letting them go back to Africa or encouraging them to help themselves and cast down their bucket where they are. No, they prefer the third option, whine to whites, blame whites for all your problems. So that's the direct problem we face, and that's why the education is needed to make the connection. No, it's not these people. They're basically a headless community. You have to understand who's doing this, why they're doing it. That's where, you know, people like McDonald's work. That's what we've always tried to promote. But you know, people have preferred to remain anonymous. But eventually, we're now to the point after 10 years where, you want to talk about progress, we are to the point where an organization like I've described would draw support. Absolutely. If you have people who are willing to go out there and be activists and actually lead and lead overtly as whites under their real name, you will get support from it. And that's a better way than
trying to be a public. What would it cost to be national?
What would it cost?
Any ideas? Have you ever looked at the costings and that sort of thing? You know how much
I don't think it would. It wouldn't cost all that much other than travel and time, and you'd have to devote your life to it. But the cost wouldn't be huge. You'd have to keep doing it until you could force your way into the media, and they knew you were going to show up as an advocate for white rights. And I would not model it on the civil rights stuff. That's not really a way to work. It's not a way to be effective, I don't think. But that's a way that I see is more fruitful than trying to, you know, join the Republicans or the Democrats.
Okay. Well, let's come back a little bit. I mean, there's this problem of traction, really, on the political process, which may not be insuperable, but is certainly very difficult. You can't describe to me precisely how that could be broken down. You can't describe to me precisely how anti-Semitic discourse would assist in breaking it down.
Well, you think the fact that you're explaining to people how things got to be the way they are, that's helpful?
Well, it is helpful, but it's a question of traction. If people have absolutely no power, if they can't put representatives into positions of power, then the options that are available to them are very limited. And that's where, really, white nationalism is today. So whilst that obtains, the question really is, what do people like us do? Now, you're suggesting a homeschooling operation and an advocacy operation. You want homeschooling? Do you want a body to actually market homeschooling to people, to help them learn, to help them take it on, to give them confidence to take it on, to get help with
That would
resources?
Probably be the natural form. But look, the thing is to develop it. First of all, what you have in the U.S. is maybe 48 million kids who go to public schools, and then maybe 1 to 2 million, but growing 5 to 10% a year of people who homeschool, and those include, you know, hippies, Christians, and white nationalists. But what you don't have out there is a curriculum that is specifically encouraged to kind of enculturate the kid and make him feel good about his race. You have Christian stuff, you don't have white stuff. That we can do. That the Jews can't interfere with. That's where the effort should be going, at least in the U.S., I think. And that, along with an advocacy group, those are, to me, the two main, like, day-in and day-out things that could be done.
What about access to higher education on the basis of that curriculum? Couldn't it just be shut off?
No. I mean, they can't. Most of these states don't really have any particular criteria for homeschooling.
No. But if you're an admissions officer in a college and you...
They wouldn't even know. How would they know? All they know is your test scores and that you were homeschooled. And you can say, oh, yeah, I gave my kids a variety of different things.
Right.
they have no way of verifying that, and they wouldn't really care. The Christians have even gone so far as they have a couple of a law school and a college specifically set up for people who are Christian homeschooled. That's what we should be doing. That's how you have to build people who perceive themselves as this. They're sure not going to get it from TV or from the public schools. They're going to be taught to despise themselves and hate their own race. And they've done a good job. They've had control of the academy for so long that basically I don't think they hardly even let anybody in who doesn't already have the communist multiculturalist mindset.
Right.
I mean, all the kids I see around, they always have Obama stuff on their car. And they really think they're at the forefront of, you know, some great change. But they can't be reached. I mean, that's the great thing about the Internet. That's why here's something I observed long ago, which is an absolute law, which is no matter what the site is out there, the comment section is always to the right or to the
right, of
the editorialist.
Yes,
well, what
is.
Does that tell you?
Yeah.
They have to keep riding herd on us because it is like being in a tiger. White people want to live the way we are talking. They don't want to live the way the liberals and the leftists are talking. They don't see any other choice.
But they are riding it successfully. This is the point. And they ride it successfully simply by ignoring. They don't have to do anything. If the people who go on the comment sections and make all of these often quite extreme comments in some cases, I mean, I'm amazed at some of the stuff that gets left up on the threads that I read.
It's changed over 10 years. It used to be people were very hypersensitive. We were getting knocked offline all the time. Now people are kind of like they've adjusted to the fact that we exist, and they're less urgent to shut us down. But the problem is, as you know, the way the Jews operated in Eastern Europe, they decapitated all those countries. That's what they try to do. Well, now they're to the point where they try to prevent a natural head from ever forming anyone who could take people in a different direction than the Jew communist leftist way. So that's kind of where the value, I would say, of your site and my site and other white nationalist sites that have arisen, it kind of shows people, look, here's a wholly different model that you could be following. It's obviously very attractive to large numbers of people. Mm. They know that, but they have all that. It's a technical problem. That's why I say, you say it's philosophy, I say it's technical. If we had it, they can't give us a fair debate stage because they will lose, and they are well aware of that.
Well, this is true. There are no arguments.
Well, they don't need to confront arguments because they have the
power.
Tools to suppress them.
Yeah.
Now, you ask me how to get around that. Well, geez, it's not easy.
No.
There's no. I don't know who you could ask who would have an answer to that. You know, maybe the answer is, you know, pretend to be something you're not, like Nick Griffin. The only thing I can say about him is he knows the truth about Jews. We know that. He knows the truth about the left. Now, is his way going to work? I don't know. I don't think it will.
No,
but
well, there are three ways of approaching what we're doing. One of these is to change the way people think. One of these is to try to enter the power structure. And the other one is the one which you've just been talking about, which is to look for a generational change. Forget what's going on now, write it off, but try to alter the future. I honestly don't know to what extent that can be made to work. I mean, I think that if you look at the parents, well, how many children are they having? Christians do have quite large families. You know, if you wanted to build up a caucus of people in 20 years' time who have the right way of thinking, well, Christians have got the right attitude because they do have the right way of going to bed. But most of the rest of us are having 1.6 children. And that's not very hopeful either. You're still going to see a reduction if it's just transmitted in that way. You're still going to see a reduction in numbers, aren't you?
Well, you can there are other ways to go. You can start your own religion. Now, I'm not the right guy to do that. But
no, I don't think so. No. I don't know about that. I
mean, you absolutely could. If you were the right charismatic type, you absolutely could found a white religion.
There is an attempt, you know, to make a Christian state in South Carolina. Do you know about that?
Yeah, I've heard. I haven't seen anything in that recently. But there are a number of secessionists, and they built like Ave Maria Catholic Law School down there in Florida, I think. But yeah, the South Carolina thing, I haven't seen anything farther on. But there are secessionist movements all over the place. All kinds of people can't stand what the country has become.
Yeah.
And you know, again, the thing is, they're destroying themselves. Now, it may take 150 years, and there may be no white people left, but
yeah.
The U.S. is going downhill due to the insanity and inherent contradictions of leftism. I hate to sound like a Marxist, but contradictions, but that's the fact of the matter. The country is bankrupt, and now they're going to take over the health system. They already don't have any money because they're running all these crazy wars. And, you know, to a large extent, what can I do to them? They're not doing it themselves. All I can do is try to alert the marginal people through, thank God, the internet that makes it easy to – I come from a publishing background, you know, where you got to take your stuff in, print out your copy, run to the printer, pay them hundreds of dollars, and then mail it out. The internet is a godsend. Yeah. We can reach all these people at once and say, look, here's what's actually going on. I may not be able to change it, but you can use this information and change your own life. That's what we can do, and that's we're doing it. Beyond that, yeah, you know, I wish I had some great recipe for changing things politically, but I don't know. It's not obvious to me how you could do that. Try whatever. Go move out in the boonies and try to dominate a county. Start a white religion and move somewhere and try it. Anything could be tried. I'm just doing what I can do and speculating about stuff that I think we as a movement could do, which we could produce a white curriculum, and there's nothing the Jews could do to stop that or prevent that from being used. But that's not as opposed to or prejudiced against any other attempt to do so. I'm not against someone starting a party. I think all those things ought to be done at once. But to do them, you have to have men to do them. You have to have someone who knows how to develop a curriculum. You have to have someone who wants to run for office, and there just aren't lots of these people.
No. This is the astounding thing. In a country with as much individualism as America, that's predicated on individualism, that there is so little in terms of, you know, stand-up guys who'll do this.
Oh, you know, honestly, I think the European countries are helped. The sheer size of the U.S., I mean, it takes 3 days to drive across. The West Coast is really, we should be about 50 countries because there's just no connection between the West Coast, Salt Lake, you know, in the Intermountain West, as they call it, and people here in the Midwest and the Mississippi. I mean, it's so far apart that you can't, like, you can drive from one end of England to the other, or one end of Germany to the other in the same day. You can't do that here. Yeah. It's just, it's huge. It's too
France
big.
France is a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, that's probably more true, but still, the U.S. is gigantic, and the one thing I would say is, yeah, if the U.S. ever starts moving, it will move at very, very rapid speed. That's one thing about the U.S. compared to Europe. We are a much, much faster moving country than, say, Germany. I don't know Britain, but compared to Germany, U.S. is just light speed faster than Germany. That's not all the good, but it is a fact. I mean, if something got going here, it will go very, very far. I mean, look what we had. You want to say, okay, we have nothing. We had Duke running as a Republican. It took the combined force of the media and both parties to undermine him, and he still took 60% of the white vote. So, and he wasn't watering down the message either, like Griffin does. Mm. He wasn't praising any Israel. He was speaking overtly in defense of white people against affirmative action. Now, he may have been a little politer than I would be, but he was straight on message. So, you know, you just don't know. A lot of it depends on having the right man. You know, people have to take into account their abilities and where they're best served. And for me personally, that meant, you know, when we started, it meant writing sharp, extremely critical. It meant laughing at the other side, not proving where it's wrong. The right wing is always the eternal stumbling block. The right wing, said Rockwell, is this obsession with facts and figures and proving that we're right. No, we're right. Just assume we're right and go after the other guys verbally and rhetorically and put confidence in people. That's a lot of what they need.
Well, I'll tell you a story. When I was on the internet one day, I came across your site. It was about 2003. And somebody had written a piece about the Jewish ladies. And it was a little rude, obviously, about their physical appearance, physiognomy. Mm-hmm. But it was hilariously funny. And but I thought I'd conduct a thought experiment. And I sent it to my brother-in-law. Now, my brother-in-law at the time was a figure in his local Liberal Democrat Party, and he would have regarded himself as being pretty much middle of the road politically in this country, so a liberal. And I didn't really know what he'd make of it. I mean, to me, it was very amusing. It was funny, and he used to send me little bits and pieces through the mail, the way people do, you know, oh, look at this, ha ha ha. So I sent him this, and what came back was an absolute explosion of outrage. There was no way I expected it to be sort of a little bit chary about it, but I was amazed at the strength of his opinion, and that told me that basically that this is a learned response. This is something that that can be unlearned, but
these
maybe not in one generation.
Like media. I mean, I don't know if it's as bad in Britain as here. It probably is, but you know, we've got endless elementary schools collecting pennies until they have 6 million, and just they have these old these old frauds going around and speaking. They're complete liars, and these gullible Midwestern kids. You know, we're all of English, German, Irish stock. They're so gullible. It never occurs to them to doubt that these people are international hucksters. They are lying out their ass about what happened to them.
Well, I mean, as far as the Holocaust is concerned, I remember in 1970. Late 1970s, it was, hearing the word for the first time. And very long after that, Herman Wouk's Winds of War with Robert Mitchum arrived on the TV screen. I knew then, watching that this was, because I was in the advertising business, I was a copywriter, that this had all the hallmarks of a marketing campaign. It was apparent at that time.
It absolutely is. All that Hitler did was discriminate against them progressively more stiffly. And he worked, this is what they never tell, he worked with them to get them to emigrate out of the country. And that's what most of them did.
Well, the cheapest thing
now,
to do,
some of them did get, they killed some. They killed some of the commissars who were killing all the white people in Eastern Europe. And it was pretty nasty. But basically, they just emigrated. And now they all, I had, 85 grandfathers died in the war. No, you didn't. You know, and you ask him, list all these people who supposedly died, and they just, how dare you ask me?
Well, there is a list.
It's a scam.
Is it Yad Vashem? There is a list, isn't
there? Oh, well, yeah, but what have they been doing the last 3 days? They're trying to get more names on it because they have like 3.6 million names. Mm. Well, how many of those names do you think would survive inspection as to what actually happened to them?
I don't know. But I mean, I do know that it's a tremendous curse. And whether it's totally true, partially true, or completely untrue is immaterial if you can't prove it. And I think we have to live with the curse. And if that means ignoring it politically so that we don't get into situations, I mean, ghastly business with Griffin. I mean, the guy actually has to say things like, I don't know why I said what I said. And how weak a defense can you come up with? That's as grim as it gets. So in a way, I'm not really very interested in Holocaust denial, and the site doesn't pursue it. Sorry, Holocaust revision. Well, I don't care what you want to call it. I wouldn't turn away from reporting developments, if there was anything useful that came up.
The only thing about ignoring it is that it's beat into the heads of white kids, and it's used to make them feel guilty.
Yeah.
So when someone like McDonald's says we shouldn't ignore it or we should talk about it, I don't see how we can. I mean, they print stories on it every single day of the year. So,
yes.
I mean, we don't even have to get into it beyond saying, well, you're throwing people in jail who claim they have proof that what you're asserting didn't happen.
Yes.
So tells me you don't really have much of a case, do you?
Well, I don't think that it's necessary to debate them from a political point of view at all. I mean, I'd let them have it. There's nothing but losses in it. And I think we just have to give that ground up and bide our time. That's the way I view that. Anyway, let's come away from that for a moment and at the issue from a slightly more philosophical perspective. One of the things that you'd said on a thread quite a while ago now, a couple of years ago at MR, was that you were probably a libertarian. And I read afterwards that somebody said, Alex has said he's a libertarian because he's just trying to say, well, basically, I'm an all right guy, I'm not a Nazi. But it seems to me from what you've been saying of late that you are, at least economically, a fairly interested advocate of libertarianism, and you would probably, as far as the economic elements are concerned, take that as your working model, yeah?
Well, I've never called myself a libertarian, and they would be, and I'm not. But that said, I used to be a small businessman, and I have respect for economic laws the way that so-called Nazis have respect for racial or biological laws.
Yeah.
And I think the real political opportunity of our time is combining the two. Now, some people say this can't be done, and they might be right, but other people said, well, it would be attractive if you would lay out what you think would be the right state for whites to live in if we got rid of the Jewish tyranny. So I said, okay, that's kind of a mug's game, and I'm a Burkean conservative. I don't like speculating about some state, but or at least you have to be very careful and go back and forth from reality to what you'd like. I think that a way that has never been really tried, and maybe it's not possible, but what I would do is have a racially homogenous state. And this is for America. I don't know what would work in Britain. I have a little bit of an idea what might work in Germany. Germany might be more natural for NS. There are certainly statements that NS is fit only for Germans. But yeah. I don't think they would work in the U.S. And what we need is a racially homogenous state with essentially a racial dictatorship. But that's its only function, is to defend the race. It's not going to take care of health, education, all this other garbage. The secret of our times, and I've said this a couple times, I really believe this, is that the state is the worst way to handle basically every single function that is traditionally handled. It's the worst way. That's what the libertarians have shown. Now, they don't have the guts to be straight on race. You've even got libertarians living in Detroit who are fancy that they're individualists. I mean, it's only white people who can even make this stuff work. White people don't need to be bossed around by an ant farm manager lot of the NS guys. Well, they don't even have a problem with our government the way it is. They just want to be running it, so they can. I don't want that, and I don't think a lot of people, white people, want that either. Basically, the non-parasitic white people don't need government. They need government is the problem. It's not the solution, and maybe there's even a better way than government to handle the racial stuff. I don't know. But what I see is a racial dictatorship, and that's the overstate. But beneath that, you have what people call states or microstates. And let them arrange themselves the way they want, except they can't disagree on race. That I'm willing to kill over.
Okay, let's just go a little bit into that. Now, I take a slightly different view of human nature to you. I don't think that people can live just by their own ways and means. I think the society is too complex anyway for that now. And also from a psychological perspective, I think that we abstract so much from the cultural soil into which we're born. Really everything that we express tends to come through from cultural influences. And we really don't have nearly the amount of freedom that we think we have. Even if libertarians, radical, Samizdat type libertarians, create a perfect state for themselves in New Hampshire and rush off there and live these very exciting lives, they're still not free men, not in the way I understand it. You have to choose the alcohol you're going to drink, because you're going to be under the influence, no matter what, of something. And it's really a question of trying to help people to take the right choice in that direction, or help make available to them the right cultural triggers. All of these things begin with people who've had ideas and who've brought to...
Here's the way you do it. You create a sort of like an Aryan state university, and its one mission is to produce defenders, and they're going to have to do it morally, intellectually, financially, whatever. You're going to have sound money, sound morals, and the way to enforce this... Now, you're going to think I'm joking, but... No. And this is taken from a joke by Mencken, but you're going to have an annual televised sacrifice, a blood ritual.
Yeah,
you're going to
sacrifice
certain people on TV. That's the only way to fight against the tendency of graft and whatever.
Well, that used to happen if you go back. I don't know if you've ever read any of Fraser and Graves and this sort of thing, but the king on the tree, that predates all of Christian.
I know that, and it's also Mencken said that they ought to sacrifice, and he was joking, but it's not a joke. You have to, instead of engaging in aggressive foreign wars, you say, look, we're going to sacrifice 5 or 10 people a year. If you want to be part of the defenders, this elite overclass, it's not bossing people around. It's protecting the race. Hitler said the state is a vehicle to protect the race. You want to be part of that, you have to take the risk of being killed in this lottery. Shirley Jackson, right? I think it's a beautiful aesthetic way of doing it, and I don't see why it's not possible.
Well, I think the basis of that is something to do with, and it's an extremely European idea, something to do with where power actually comes from. It is lent by the people, and ultimately they have ownership of that power and the ownership of the life of the people that they give it to. It's a rather beautiful image, but to be perfectly honest, in this day and age, I don't think there would be too many people who are so keen on power that they would want to risk.
That's the beauty of it. Weed them out. You want to go be a businessman, be a businessman. You got the freedom as long as you don't try to undercut the race. But if you do, we're gonna sort you out, as you British say.
Yeah. Mm. Well, okay. I mean, if one wants to construct a healthy political system, do you start with the system, or do you start with the ideas the system adopts? One of the questions I sent you was on this subject, You've said that you feel that we're now moving out of the, certainly WN is now moving out of the period of putting ideas out on the internet and is reaching the point where it has to take hard decisions and take firm action.
Well, can I just slightly qualify that?
Yeah.
We're not beyond ideas and whatever, but we've now laid a basis to where, in America at least, there is the chance to do the kind of advocacy group that I've talked about. That was all I meant by that. No, we need more and more and more. Not so much ideas as putting those ideas in the traditional forms in the way that our various sites do, but also just more and more and more. More can't hurt at all in that regard. But we have the possibility now to go beyond that in America.
Okay, well, I mean, you say you've got the possibility to go beyond that in America. Tell me what you mean, because I'm really puzzled by your sudden optimism. I didn't sense it before.
It's exactly what I already talked about. Give me a couple good speakers, give me a couple good lawyers, do it full time, have a secretarial support, and you will be able to draw plenty of money from the middle class, the respectables, as well as the radicals. And you will have some people who overtly, publicly, officially, unashamedly stand for white interests without any compromise. That's what's possible now. I don't think that was so possible years ago. It's certainly possible now. But no one wants to do it. What they want to do is, God, I saw a good Goebbels said, and you really, I encourage everybody to listen to this if you haven't already, and you probably have. Read all of the translated stuff by Bitwork at calvin.edu and how the Nazis went about. Now, it's not wholly relevant to our situation, but a lot of it is. And one thing he says is all these smart guys, they just want to prove that they're it's one-upsmanship. No one wants to lead or be responsible. They just want to prove they're a little cleverer than the next guy. And that, so we have all these people writing essays, and then we have, you know, the NSM out in the street. There's something that could be in between that I don't think was possible years ago, but I do think is possible now because all of our sites have spread these ideas so broadly, and they are so attractive to a lot of people. But they don't have any leadership. There has to be someone willing to take the responsibility and actually lead in public.
There won't be too many leaders if you're going to nail them on a tree, Alex, that's for sure. But never mind.
That's for after you've won the victory. Obviously, leading up to the victory, there's going to be you know, forces fighting and lots of bloodshed and a time of tribulation and misery. But if we had an all-white state and there weren't any other whites around and North America were all white, how would you arrange a state? Well, that's what I was trying to outline. And I think my idea would be pretty attractive to people in America because a lot of the people who aren't drawing off the government, basically want to be left alone. And I don't think their instincts are so bad. I'm not one of those who believes there's some fundamental problem with the white race. I see it more as we have this giant Jewish nose and thumb that are oppressing us.
Yeah. Well, let me just talk a little bit. What I've always been interested in, ever since I first came across his work, is Rushton's take on sociobiology, and particularly on racial differences. That was quite a strong influence on my thinking. And when I decided to go on the internet and try to create a personality as guest worker, it was really Rushton that I was pushing pretty damn hard, actually getting up a lot of people's nose and getting myself banned for repeating the stuff over and over again. What I've come down to these days is a pretty clear understanding that Europeans uniquely are conflicted with nature. We're conflicted with nature because we evolved the way to survive for 8 months in the year in the cold north. By overcoming her, as simple as that. The Chinese probably don't do it in the same way we do. They have a very conformist attitude. They have a very strong tendency to look to leadership for approval and an entirely different way of going about things. But our way was to fundamentally establish ourselves as the master of nature. And it's out of this that everything that we have has come. It's out of this that our technology has come. It's out of this that our art, everything, flows from this huge endeavor that's peculiar to European man to try to get a grip on his own future, to try to survive. It's all about that. It's all about the way that we've evolved. Now, you say there's no crisis, but when you conquered nature, which we probably did, maybe Tudor times or a little earlier than that. So say 1300 or so, I don't know, somewhere around there perhaps. And we were fairly secure. What happens to this psychological sort of urge? What happens to the European nature? Well, does it turn in on itself? Does it try to find some way of still expressing its need to master? And are the frictions and conflicts within us, within our society, when we look at left and right and this sort of thing, are they actually really an expression of this essential nature? I don't know. I can't say for sure because I'm not a psychologist, but I look at this and I suspect that there's something to it, and that the reality is that we're not actually nearly as uncomplicated as we think we are, and quite a lot of the problems that we face today are really a working out of this strategy, which is not needed. I mean, you know, I live a very good life. I have a nice house. I've got three cars. I've got some land and all this sort of thing. My evolved nature, however, is not designed for this. This has happened at 5 minutes to midnight in the story of European Man. So my evolved nature is still trying to express itself. And the interesting thing is, if this is part of the problem that we face, then the Jewish argument ceases to be as total. And it has to be accommodated. It doesn't mean that it's lessened. It means that it's their place as occupiers of a niche, pushing this process of conflict, which is inherent to us.
Karen, I'm not sure I totally follow that, but you're saying the liberalism essentially is
No, it's more than liberalism, isn't it? It would take a psychologist, evolutionary psychologist, to really comment on this. I don't know, but if it's something that might be happening, then we do have an essential problem, a problem of our nature, and that would have to be addressed in a different way from trying just to resolve the problem. Because essentially, if you were to take away the Jews, if you were to take them all out tomorrow morning, completely from the equation, and say, okay, now we can live, we don't have any of the issues that were being created by their media, by their political activism, by their cultural philosophy, and so on, we don't have any of that, we're still going to be self-destructive. And what this tendency, this love that people on the left have, actual appetite for destruction, they're content with destruction. This will go on.
Yeah, I guess the thing is, I see that as the perversion. Whites have more creativity and intelligence than other races. And when those things are perverted due to whatever reason, they're going to take destructive forms. But without the Jews, I don't think that they would dominate. Yeah, I think it would be almost impossible for them to dominate.
But this started well before Jews were involved. I mean, in any large scale. Well, to me, it isn't. I mean, if I look at the Dark Ages, for heaven's sake, they're not called the Dark Ages these days by serious academics in that period. You know, if you look back at that time where you had the Holy Inquisition and this sort of great effort to enforce a very, very narrow ideology on the people and to substantiate the control of the Catholic Church across Europe, you can see there this same effort to put control down.
Now, sure.
In European society,
we'll think like that.
In European society, I mean, I'm talking basically about Alpine and you know, Northern Europeans here. This had not happened other than during the Roman period. So this is something that's independent of Jewry. I mean, it predates Jewry by a long, long way in terms of their political power over us anyway.
I guess the difference is that, if you had no Jews, there would certainly still be problems. I don't think our race would be looking at its own genocide, though. You know, it would be more maybe a problem of personality or whatever, or crazy policies or people not open to reason. But that's why, you know, you split things up and you devolve it and you let different communities go their own way. Now, some may try to lord it over them or may try physically to impose their will, but I think that's where whites are headed or would be headed. We're more individuated, but that's why we need to be racially protected. But, yeah, there would be problems if there weren't any Jews around, but they wouldn't take the genocidal form that they take today. And you're right about leftists. A lot of these people do actually physically enjoy. They enjoy. They get real satisfaction out of seeing people murdered, killed, and destroyed. That's absolutely true. And that's why the conservatives, one reason they're so weak is they always say, I know the left, these people are very well motivated. It's just this policy is going to have. No, they're not well motivated. They enjoy seeing people raped and killed. They really do truly enjoy seeing people raped and killed. Best example of that is those when the international media, you probably remember this from years ago, there were some South African special forces, big, beefy, tough white guys.
Yeah,
and somehow they got trapped by the blacks, and the media goaded the blacks into murdering them. That is their real attitude.
Well, it's the why that's the issue. Destructiveness comes from somewhere. I don't think the destructiveness has been hatched in us by Jewishness. I think it has
It doesn't have to be destructiveness, though. That's the thing. Whites, as McDonald says, whites are more we're more open to foreign influences and taking people one by one than Jews are. He quotes some study where Jewish babies go nuts when someone strange comes in the room. Well,
that's
there's
right.
a biological difference right there. Mm. So they're using one of our qualities
stranger
against
fit.
Us. Even a good quality becomes bad when this other people can take advantage. That's what I see going on. The way we fight that is by developing an intellectual understanding of it, since we don't have so much of a visceral understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
And then using our brains to organize and fight back. But yeah, if we win and we get rid of the Jews, we get rid of the blacks, other perversions will crop up, but I don't think they'll be as destructive, and I think they'll be a heck of a lot easier to put down, like homosexuals, for example. There's no way in hell they would have the power that they do unless you have some foreign
I agree absolutely
body
about that. Yeah.
Controlling our country. Mm-hmm. You just say to them, look, if you want to do your thing in private in the closet, we'll leave you alone, because white men need their space and their freedom. But you want to come out in public and be respected? No, we're not going to allow that. And it would be fine. It would work just fine. What system? Do you think there's one system that fits a white man?
You know, I'll make a lot of enemies in saying so, but I think that we've got some fundamental issues wrong that have to be righted. One of those is Christianity, which I don't think is a great help at all.
Tell me, I want to know your point of view on this. Now, when I came in, I think probably like you, I'm not sure if you call yourself an atheist, but
yes.
You seem to have the same general view I do, even though you're more interested in some of the science than I am. But I came into this mildly anti-Christian from just general experience. I'm a lot more anti-Christian now than I ever was. I really think that it's not just Spengler saying it's the grandmother of Bolshevism and basically the mother of this liberalism. But I think that's probably the worst thing that ever happened to the white race.
Yes, yes. Well, Christianity was never chosen by the white race.
But the thing is, I didn't believe that 10 years ago. I thought it was just a kind of a minor. It seemed to prevent some people from thinking clearly. But no, it's very much more closer to the root of the practical everyday problem that we face. Because it absolutely unties cause and effect in people's mind, and
Alex,
it paves the way.
There's two functions which a religion has. One function is to the outside function, the external function, is to express what you describe as adaptive behaviors, you know, just morals that are becoming to people, that actually increase their genetic interests or bond them in one way or another, make life successful for the tribe. And this is why religions vary so much around the world and why the morals that they recommend are so very different. They're all equal. There's no right or wrong. It's simply a question of the local need. And that's the general use for 99% of people who go into a church and sing and pray or flop on the floor and face the east or whatever they do. That's what it's for. And it comes from our evolved nature. That's what it is. The form of the religion doesn't matter, but the morals do. Now, in the heart of every religion is a very interesting body of knowledge. It is usually the same body of knowledge, which is about the nature of reality, about the nature of what man has acquired and what he is innately. And that tiny part of formal religions is very much unknown and of no interest to 99% of people who go into the church. The most interesting church from this point, religion from this point of view, is Islam, because it's the most recent, and they still have quite a substantial living body, which is, broadly speaking, is Sufism. And you can look up Sufism and you can see that it is often referred to as being a sort of knowledge that predates Islam itself. So it's quite interesting to look at religions and to determine whether you're just talking about a social movement with evolutionary roots, or whether you're talking about something genuinely philosophical.
But here's the thing, the Christian you say that to, you say that to E. Michael Jones, you'll say no. Our religion absolutely based on this historical event that actually happened. And if you don't accept that, you're wrong.
Let me tell you something about the Christian religion. It has no core. It never had a core. It's fragments of something that may have existed sometime a long, long ago, or may never have existed at all, and then just adopted some fragments and put them into the story. I don't know. But it doesn't matter whether Christ existed or not to me, because its only function is for moral behaviors. Now you come to the crux of it. It's not our religion. It killed our religion. The elites of the time decided to adopt this religion and to enforce it on the people, and they did it in the most vicious possible way, and they planted their churches on the hilltops where the old places of worship were. And whatever moral systems had evolved and were expressed in the old religion were completely quashed, and either had to try to sort of regrow through Christianity, or somehow or other became perverted or covered over and lost. So a lot of what is wrong about us today comes from this event, in my opinion. I'm not anti-religion. I'm not saying I'm against religion here. I don't have any need to worship anything, but I'm not against religion. But I do believe that Christianity is a tremendous problem for us. We've essentially been cut adrift from the behavioral goods to which we are entitled through faith, those of us who have a strong faith. And we're all, to one extent or another, influenced by the kind of moral systems that religion predicates, even Christianity. So I think it's been very dangerous and very difficult for us. I don't think it serves people who are interested in the deeper and more sincere aspects of it at all. And I don't think it really serves us morally and tribally. So that's my take on Christianity. I don't expect anybody to agree with me. I'll get a lot of...
Have you read... who's the fellow? He may comment at your site. I'm not sure. The Germanization of Early Medieval Christianity. You must be familiar with that. He's one of the guys on McDonald's E-list.
I don't know.
James Russell?
James Russell, I wouldn't know him. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, I've read the book. It's interesting. He's trying to claim that they more or less tried to reinterpret Christianity in terms that made sense of what you're speaking about, the kind of the older ways of these Germanic tribes.
Yes.
Now, I don't know. I my objection to it is more that I just see these people. It seems to me that the practical everyday effect of Christianity is that it is just taught people. It doesn't have any respect for reasoning, basically. And I'm not. And then you say that, oh, you worship reason. I don't worship reason. But if you have a way of figuring something out, and you're taking people, and you're deliberately telling, oh, yeah, the laws can be suspended so that Jesus can come back from the grave, it cripples people.
Yes.
And they want to claim that they're the basis of all science. How can you claim that? It's working. It's dovetailing with the public schools in basically teaching people that, not even to think and reject thinking, but just to have a general fear of any attempt to logically connect cause and effect. And it works. It really has a destructive effect.
Yeah, not a day goes by when I wonder about the old faith and what it actually did, how it worked. What I really think about, I try to imagine, is how it expressed our nature. Yeah, and what we lost was an expression of our nature.
Don't you think my impression, I don't know. I don't know a lot about religion.
No.
But my impression is that our old people admired different things than what they admire now. Now they're admiring, oh, you're only a good person if you're going over to Africa and saving the little nigglets. Yeah, whereas the old people, they admired the things that are admirable, strength, honor, honesty, good looks, and they'll say, oh, you're worshiping the powerful. Well, what's so great about worshiping the defective and the stupid?
Yes. I mean, well, you know, when you look at the situation today, for the common man, I mean, it is absolutely ghastly. There's this faith, which I think is quite questionable, which is, I suppose, impossible to replace. You can't suddenly decide to replace a religion. You have to have a certain energy arise from somewhere to do that. And on top of that, you have this sort of story being told by Hollywood and by the media, and you know, these awful images of what we're supposed to be, and the celebrity culture as well, and the press. Yeah. The whole thing, when you look at it and say, well, where are people going to actually find some good food, some good cultural references? Where in all of this picture? No, nowhere. It's not there. Europeans don't have the huge benefit of their own culture in the way that Chinese and Indians, Malays and so on, you know, they still have their own deep cultures. And we somehow, we've been cut off, we've been left with these really second-hand goods, shoddiest possible, and we're told to enjoy ourselves in our leisure time and to have no greater meaning in our life and to be individuals or even atomized individuals or to sit back and enjoy celebrating diversity and whatever. I mean, it's absolutely a desperate picture. And to me, the answer isn't to say, got to get them Jews. The answer to me is to say, we've got to find some way, and it's a long operation, we've got to find some way of bringing life back to this, but it is really a very, very grim picture indeed, and I'm bloody pessimistic about it all. You know, I don't know how Spengler felt, but he couldn't have felt a lot worse than I do.
Not just Spengler, and I can't qualify his thesis of society's aging, whatever. But Chesterton and Lewis and all the people who are considered conservatives are teaching the West is nothing apart from the Church.
Yeah,
and to me, I don't see it that way at all. And the Church has more non-whites than whites right now. And I always chide, because I'm always arguing. I argue with the Kinnist people who I've met. They're good people, at least Harry Seabrook is, over at Spirit, Water, Blood.
Yes.
And they showed up in Knoxville, and I met them. But, you know, where's your black shart, you know, or Notre Dame? Where are the blacks doing? I'm like, it has nothing to do with Christianity. I mean, Caravaggio can paint, you know, Boy Bitten by a Green Lizard with all the technical facility that he uses in one of the religious thing. I mean, we were white back during the Greeks and Romans. They showed everything that you see today. Hmm. That's before Christianity. Whites will be around after Christianity. Christianity is not what caused us to be a great people.
No.
It's just something in the blood. If you took, you know, a couple thousand white babies and threw them out in the forest, they're going to develop something civilized that's not Christian. And they can't see that at all. They won't concede anything in that regard.
No. Well, that's the nature of faith. I mean, we have quite a strong caucus of religious at MR, and I won't argue with them. I won't take the argument to them, because I don't think there's anything to be gained at all from trying to destroy their faith. Faith in itself is a good thing. It's an evolved thing. It's part of our nature. And, you know, it's a bit like the Holocaust argument. I'm not going to get involved in trying to actually change their point of view at all. There's some ground in life that you have to give in the hope that you can, you know, really win the arguments that matter most to you. And today, the argument that matters most to me is about our physical dispossession. That's what I really think we have to attend to first. I think if we don't attend to the way that we're atomizing philosophically and being dispossessed physically, then, you know, we're going to have a very marginal future, that's for sure.
And we're talking. And how are you going to do that? Through overt public political organization?
Well, you've got these three routes. You know, you educate the young, you try to get into politics today, or you try to produce highfalutin ideas and inject them into the intellectual bloodstream. I mean, those are the only three routes available to us. I'm tending to take the latter route, not because I'm particularly eloquent or intellectual, but because that just suits my nature, and because I probably have a more advanced view, I'm ahead of the game a bit in that respect than most of the other guys in WN. Now, if you go over to TOQ, And you look at them, I mean, they've got, I don't know, 20 people on there. There's none of them who are as advanced as I am in terms of and I speak to people I know and people I respect enormously. You know? I mean, Tom Sinich is a very good friend of mine. I adore Tom. And, you know, I would give up any amount of time for him or help him as much as I possibly could in what he tries to do. But the bottom line is that I don't regard Tom's Weiss and Schoen as being as advanced philosophically as my own. And I look around and I'm trying to find people who've got something similar to or more advanced than my own view. And I've got a couple of guys around MR, of course, Sorin is one. Dasein is another, who think in very similar ways. Not exactly the same, but they understand exactly what I'm saying. And I mean, in Sorin's case, I'm trying very hard to understand portions of what he says. So, I mean, that's the particular field I work in.
What ultimately could you affect? A change in the European man's understanding of himself?
Yes. I think that in the end, the wheels all move at different speeds. If you're talking about trying to change this thing generationally through education, you're probably looking at 3, 4, 5 generations to build up a real head of steam and get the thing rolling. So, I mean, it's 20 years a generation. Since you were talking about education, you know, it can't be done quicker than that. It's probably a 25 or even 30 year cycle, really, because of the age at which white people have children these days. But so, you know, that's a slow process. The only fast process, if it worked, is the political process, when you could be looking at 10 to 20 years. My way of doing things, I regard as being part of the political process or prior to the political process, in a way, because I don't believe that politics can deliver stable change without having a stable philosophy from which it can abstract its ideals and eventually draw down its goals. And I think that that's how I would see what I'm trying to do. Whether it has any chance of really succeeding, I don't know. I mean, I had a conversation, a bit of a one-sided one, unless he responds, with Lee Barnes, the BNP man.
Mm-hmm.
Just today, in which I've made this point, you know, he's doing his thing. He expects that to be the only way that this battle is going to be won. And as far as he's concerned, we're arranging the seating positions for angels on pinheads and wasting our time.
Yeah, I read this comment.
This comment is
get elected above all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one of the three routes that you could go. But it isn't the only way, or necessarily, it cannot be, must not be the only way that this is being done. Alex, one other thing I'd like to talk about you, because you know more about this than I do, and this is the NS thing. Is it real for us today? Which parts of it would you try to... You said earlier about combining the two. You were talking with the other half being...
Well, I don't see how we could do it without a racial dictatorship as kind of the overstate, but... Yeah, I studied abroad in Germany in 87. I actually even we took a little week tour through East Germany, which was kind of neat because the wall came down a couple of years later. But there, I had a real epiphany. I've written this, and it sounds really stupid, but it took me several months, and I was like, wow. I'm like, they're not Americans speaking German. They're Germans. They're a different kind of people,
yeah.
And that's so obvious and clear. But it wasn't. I guess I had to just imbibe the liberal assumption. You know, people are all the same. No. They're more like an extended family than in America. America is British descended, people from all over Europe, mostly Northwestern Europe, but it's a different culture. So NS fits them more. It's more of a culture where someone might lecture you for, say, crossing the street against a red light, which no one in America would think twice about. So it's not, they're not like, I don't know what it's like in Britain, but they're not like Americans. They're a little different, even though we're the same racially. More Americans are German than anything else, or more
yes.
White Americans, but we're not like that culturally. So you can't say that, you can't assume that the system that works for us is going to work for them. So the NS, the reality of it, what we can take from it is that, you know, my favorite Nazi poster is just, you know, a big blonde dude, and he's just taking a pitchfork and mucking the Jew out of society. That's it. all these people want to be clever and not use the term Jew and not face up. You have to face up to them and take them on. And that's one thing I take from them. I take from them the physical courage and the intellectual courage. Goebbels went to Berlin. Berlin was Red Berlin, and the Nazis took it over through physically fighting the communists and intellectually dominating them. That's what we need. We can take example from their physical and moral courage
right.
in beating down the Reds. How do you beat the Reds? How did they beat Rosa Luxemburg and Karl Liebknecht? They hit them in the head with shovels, they shot them, and they threw them in a canal. And that's really about all you can do when you're facing people who won't allow honest debate. So,
well, it might be a little firm, but I mean, the reality is, if you want to today, if you want to defeat the left, it's not a problem in debate. The problem is getting them to debate honestly.
Why would they? And that's the thing. They're not going to debate honestly.
They don't need to.
They can't. It's not that they don't need to. They can't debate. So of course they're not going to debate. All they're going to do is smear you and call you a hater. Are you? And if you're a conservative, this is what the British type people could learn from the Germans is the Germans are far more serious about stuff. I used to, when I was studying over there, I'd go, and I was used to debating politics in American campuses, and I'd go up there, and outside the mess hall, you know, where they serve lunch, they'd have tables, and the one I was at was in Marburg, which is very left-wing, and they're ready to fight over stuff.
Yeah.
In America, it's British, it's all, ha, 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 you know, I say this, you say that, and after the light goes off, we go out and we have a beer.
Yeah.
It's different over there, and their way makes a lot more sense. It's okay, you think, let's fight over it, let's kill, let's see who's the right person. Whereas the American way, the British way, is just bullshit, 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 bullshit. Lie, 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 hypocrisy, hypocrisy, hypocrisy. And at the end of the day, oh, you know, we'll muddle through or somehow. Well, it's not working. It's not working. Sometimes you have to have someone who actually stands for something and believes exactly what they're saying and says exactly what they mean and goes for it. That's what I associate with German. That's the good part of it. And, you know, leaving aside their martial valor, basically I see that's what we can learn from those 30s Germans. But, yeah, we have a different society, so a different kind of ultimate solution probably than I don't think Americans would take quite so easily to the regimentation. But then again, people saying that NS was totalitarian, it wasn't totalitarian in the way the Soviets were.
No. But, I mean, they had political gangsterism. They destroyed their enemies. And even towards the end of the war, right, I think 2 days in one instance before Americans took a particular village, they still hung a guy for being pessimistic, you know? It was a most un-European outbreak of control. I mean, I don't regard that as having been anything that could have been stable, because we're individuals, and Germans are individuals too.
But, you know, but it's that's the thing. That's what MacDonald says is he says the Nazis were not Western because it was a collective response to a collective problem. That's my argument is the Jews work as a team. Whether MacDonald's theory is right or not, I don't even care, because the central point is they are working as a team against us who are working as individuals. That's why we always lose.
Yes.
The Nazis developed a team response, a collective response to the, and it's, if you read NS stuff, it's actually surprising how little the Jews figure in it. But where they do figure in, they say, this is a Jew, this is what the Jews are doing to Germany, we have to fight back against them. You can't get, it's very difficult to get people in British cultural countries to get to that level where they can do that comfortably. I'm totally comfortable with it. I think it's the only way that even can work, theoretically. But, yeah, that is really, if you want to study effective responses to a Jew-controlled society, and you can take all the indexes of success, achievement, money, whatever, and look in Germany, and you see the same thing as you would probably see today in Britain or certainly see in America. Jews are controlling all these spheres, and they are undermining our culture, and everything that they do is anti-white. It was the same thing in Germany. I mean, it is absolutely remarkable how similar it is. Dominating all the media, they're mocking, you know, they're mocking the soldiers, they're mocking all the traditional German ways. They're doing exactly the same thing in America today, but we have not been able to leverage a response against them because we are, I would say, partly because we have that British cultural background where you're supposed to be polite and you're supposed to be somewhat hypocritical and never really say what you mean and don't be too, it doesn't work. It doesn't work when you're fighting the Jews to be like that. So, but, you know, let things develop. Maybe Griffin has the right way. Maybe praising Israel and not sticking up for whites is the right way to do it. Lee Barnes certainly seems to think it's the right way. I don't think it is. But, you know, I'm not going to criticize the guy if he's able to actually get elected. Maybe that's what works in Britain, is you say the opposite of what you mean, and you get elected, and then you do what you really intended to do. All I know is, me personally, and I think Germans in general, it doesn't work like that. It's best for me, in my heart and soul, to say exactly what I believe to be true, put it in the most vibrant and memorable form possible, and be exactly what I say I am. That's what I've tried to do, and I think that's a valid approach.
Well, it has been a valid approach. It's got you where you are, wherever that
may be. Where am I?
But it's made you one of the small group of significant people in the movement. And
they know what I stand for, and they at least have to rebut that argument or that approach.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously we have a huge, long way to go.
Yes, yes.
And we need more people, but I think, you know, your site, TOQ, although I'm somewhat at odds with some of the people out of personal irritation at them, it is...
Which ones?
Well, several of them are ex-VNN writers. The one dude very knowingly did plagiarize from me an entire concept of you needing a counter to racism, and he didn't even have the decency to mention the term I came up with, which is Loxism, and I came up with this years ago. That irritates me. But anyway, the point is that there are more people who are talking about this stuff than ever before, and I think that will continue to grow into the future. And I just am trying to push it wherever I can.
How long are you going to keep VNN going? Is it a permanent...
Yeah, I thought this all through before I ever got started. I thought through all the way to my own death or my own murder or whatever happened. And unfortunately, the last couple of years, I've had some very bad physical stuff happen to me. So I've been more or less just commenting, whatever. But no, I'll keep pushing and doing whatever I can. I mean, that's why I'm pushing the homeschooling stuff. I'm hoping to find somebody who knows about curriculum development and what it would take and get that going. Because all these things can work at the same time. You can run a political party. You can have cultural offerings. You can have magazines. You can have online stuff. None of it is prejudicial towards the rest. That's people so often argue as though you have to choose one way and do that. You can do all of these things the same time.
The Jews put out
the same message across, you know, multi-level propaganda, as Rockwell said. That's what we have to do also. Not just multi-level propaganda, but wherever we can get our hooks into institutions or create our own, do it. So keep developing and expanding outwards as much as possible. I mean, I read your site. It's full of very intelligent people, and I disagree with some things I read, but, you know, that's true of every site. It's good stuff. I know you intend what's best for Europe and for Britain, and I can't judge stuff that's going on in Britain that well. I see what my people in our British site say. I read what Griffin and Barnes say, read what you say, you know, and try to come to some understanding of, you know, different things work in different cultures.
My feeling is that if we got, certainly in Europe, if we got one country claimed, then the impact elsewhere would be enormous. If that was America, the impact would be fantastic. I mean, fantastic. It would be game, set, and match, which is what I said before. It isn't going to be America. Maybe we'll see the Dutch guy do something. Maybe we'll see something happen in Denmark. Maybe the Eastern Europeans will hold out, you know, against the neoliberal bandwagon, and we'll see something shining there that'll help.
It's very hard to know, because in America, almost everything that we get is filtered through essentially Jewish reporters for the Jewish papers here in the U.S., You never really fully know what's real. But I'll tell you, let me just put this out there. The one thing I really watch is, okay, Griffin will speak against Muslims. Muslims are a huge problem in Europe, kind of the way Mexicans are here in the U.S.
They are in Europe. They're not particularly a big problem here. I think he's speaking about them as a way of not offending you-know-who.
But see, in all these countries, the Jews they've gotten the blood laws repealed in Germany. They've gotten the immigration, the open borders. And now that Muslims are causing them a problem, it's like they're trying to use these white front groups to carve the Muslims out of the diversity that they otherwise are very happy to have in these white lands. So that's the cynical side of this.
I think it's Hegelian, a desire on certain people's part to institute quite a harsh form of control.
Yeah, but the point I'm making is, look, U.S. reversed its immigration policy in 65, and Australia did more or less exactly the same thing at about exactly the same time. And when you look into it, sure, by God, it's the same Jews for the same reason. You know, Australia is an Asian country, and we have to get rid of the white Australia. It's the same people doing exactly the same thing for the same reason. And that's why I always talk about the Jews. Now, a lot of liberals go along with them, but the Jews are the driving force on that stuff. And it's basically in every country. It's the same thing. They want Israel to be an ethnically pure country.
We've had discussions. I'm not going to go on too much longer, but we've had quite deep discussions going back four or five years.
You've printed a very long... You just put up the fourth part of an article. Yeah, that's excellent stuff. That is very, very helpful to outsiders to read that stuff. And the kind of the legal history of bringing the third world into Britain, as it were.
Yes.
I think you call it non-discrimination.
Yeah, the fight against discrimination, yes. That's right.
Yeah.
The war.
It may be a little different in Britain, but the same basic model is followed in all these countries.
Yes, it is. But, I mean, you can't necessarily say that the activists in every case were needed to be Jewish. I don't think that is particularly true. I think Australia is a case in point where the white Australian policy was disposed of by Australians from the left. And I think that in the Nordic countries, there's sort of great desire to import Nigerians in Finland. You know, it's extraordinary. They actually had a warehouse, which they'd opened up, I believe, at one point, and imported the 60 Nigerians because they felt that they needed to start somewhere, you know. This wasn't done by Jews. This was done by crazy Finns. So we can be quite mad enough. And I wouldn't like to say at this point that resolving the Jewish question will necessarily resolve that question. But it would sure as hell make it more manageable. That I will grant you. But,
that's,
you know,
true.
We shall see. We shall see. Alex, it's been great to talk to you. I've enjoyed it. I'm going to try to get this down to a transportable volume, which I think is in the area of 45.
Okay, well, I've enjoyed talking to you, and I like your site, and I recommend it.
Well,
it's good stuff.
All right,
lots to learn from it.
I hope VNM prospers. I hope you overcome whatever issues that have afflicted you for the past 2 years, and you revivify yourself and your determination to fight on. And good luck to you.
Okay.
Cheers.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Good speaking with you.
Okay, bye-bye.